if I say this has happened to me, you're going to help me. But the first thing they're going to do is try to put you in jail for being a homo. Yeah.
Welcome to the Feminist Bar Podcast with your host, Tina Tsuemaka. Join me for drinks and chats with feminists all over the world across background, sexuality, and discipline to talk about all things life through our radical feminist lens.
So today we are going to be talking about queer identity in Africa, what our queerness has meant in relation to our relationships with other women, how we live, how we find love, and how the different policies and frameworks in our countries have affected our love lives and our queerness. My guest today is Lusa from Zambia. So excited to have you here. You can just go ahead and introduce yourself to the people.
I'm Lusa, as Tina Sue said, I'm from Zambia. I am an LLM holder, International Business Law. I work for a queer organization, actually, and I'm just trying to figure out life as a Black queer woman in Zambia.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much for being here. I appreciate it so much. To anybody listening, thank you for tuning in. I know that a lot of you have been reaching out on social media saying that you wanted the episodes to be longer. And to be completely honest, I don't trust that you're going to continue listening if I made these episodes an hour long. But maybe today we will give you an extra 5 minutes since we have so much to talk about, since this is a loaded conversation. So the first question that we have to today, we're just going to get directly into it since I have so much social media engagement to also share with you guys about this topic, is how has your sexuality affected your relationships and friendships with straight women? Lusa, do you want to comment on that? Do you want to go first?
It's difficult because I had this group of friends before I knew who I was. They weren't the type to navigate and sort of open up to, and I don't ever think I would see myself having the conversation with them because it was like constant ignorance, like even in like the little conversations we'd have. I feel like lucky for me now, I have found friends that understand my stance on life and just who I am. It's amazing because I feel like I found a tribe and there's always going to be a community for me. I have friends who are trans women, everybody in the LGBT spectrum is a good friend of mine, and I also have a good feminist network of friends who came to like shelter me the most, and they actually led me to most of my queer friends, because if it wasn't for one of my friends leading me to an interview once, I wouldn't have actually known that there were that many queer people in Zambia. I actually thought it was just me. I literally used to think we are a rare thing to see until I was introduced to this group, and it's been an amazing 2 years so far, ever since I got back to Zambia, and I felt more than welcome. I felt more than loved. For my friendships with straight women, oh, I don't know. I take them with a hint of salt because I understand that not many people can understand certain things, but I try to find friends who are like-minded. And most of my feminist friends are actually very straight, but they have learned to understand different dynamics in life.
Yeah, I love that. And I totally agree that I think for myself as well, in my feminist friendships, that is where I found the most understanding and the most open-mindedness, which maybe I, you know, just hadn't really experienced all this time, because I think my experience of straight women is really sometimes feeling a little bit isolated or just feeling a little bit misunderstood, feeling not taken seriously, feeling put to the side. You know, your queerness can be a party favor. The fact that you're a lesbian, everyone wants to talk to you at the party all about how much you're a lesbian. So true. That for me, like, I think I can say has been the worst part. But I do want to read out a couple of tweets and Instagram DMs that I got here. Actually, you know what? Let me be completely honest. I put out a tweet and most queer women did not want to tweet out their responses. They rather wanted to DM me because they didn't want their friends or their acquaintances to see their tweets and feel a way about it, which is literally exactly the point of this episode. But anyway, I think the first one I'm going to read is, every single girl that I approach thinks it's a compliment. Sometimes I just want to chill and smoke and stuff. I really like that one because she was like, listen.
I mean, I get where she's coming from because like people believe you have to have this extraordinary personality or TV image of yourself because you are from this community.
The second one, I actually really love this DM because this person put down an entire list, which really was basically the things that everybody else said. I think I got about 16 DMs from this. Number one, I am tired of straight women assuming I'm interested. Number two, I am no longer interested in listening to their conversations about their boyfriends or husbands, because when I talk about my girlfriend or my partner, it's met with cold responses. Number three, I am hypervigilant and wary of cishet women who are always keen to put us in homophobic spaces because their partners can usually be and are usually homophobic and they don't care.
She hit the nail on the head, like the 3 points were everything that needed to be said.
Yeah, 100%. She was like, pop, 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 pop. Especially that third one about they want to talk about their boyfriends, but when you want to talk about your partner, they just don't take it that seriously.
The one that resonated for me was being brought into spaces where they know you aren't welcome.
This other person was really mad. Sis was really mad. She was like, I'm done with straight women. All they do is center men in their conversations. And what that usually means is when you speak out against something as a queer woman and as a feminist, they already believe that you have an ulterior motive and that you're just trying to tell them that men are trash. I loved the thing about straight women centering men in most of their lives. And I think I've seen it a lot where people say a lot of straight women's identities are tied to relationships, who they're dating, who they want to date, who they will end up dating. And sometimes there is just a glitch because queer people don't process things like that because of the marginalization that we've had for so long. We're not always thinking about dating. There's so much more going on.
That is so true. And for the fact that we don't see certain relationships in that way, so we kind of see through the BS, if you will, it's easier to tell that this person is just a misogynist, point blank, period. With somebody who I feel like is a cisgender or cishet woman, she would be like, oh, we have to give him a chance. Maybe that's just how he is. He's set in his ways. And it's just like, sis.
There's no option to forgive someone's bigotry because you are literally the subject of it. You don't get to go away and experience their harmful opinion here and there. You literally live it every day. So I think there's just that lack of objectivity. But I hope that, you know, whoever is listening to this who is straight, you know, can look at their actions and see their friendships and hopefully be the kind of friend that they need to be, because sometimes the things that we do are not intentional. They are just a result of the way that we have been socialized. So question number two, what is the unlikeliest way that stringent laws have affected your life as a queer woman? Oh my God, I need to go first because I have so much
to say. Do it, do it, do it.
Number one, everybody is hiding inside their house. Being from Zimbabwe, being from Harare, that means that I am in one town and I probably know every single queer woman there is. I know probably every single member of the LGBTQIA community. The unlikeliest way that I have personally been affected is that in the beginning, I was just dating whoever I could date because honestly, I just did not have that many options. Let me tell you, like, I just did not have that many options. And I think so many people can relate because to this day, I speak to so many people from Harare that are queer and they're like, listen, you know, there's all nine of us here. Sometimes you just have to date this person. And sometimes we're all dating each other because there's nothing else that we can do about it. And when you go to these queer events, even if you want to make friends, even if you want to make genuine platonic connections, sometimes it's hard because it almost feels like everyone has been let off the leash and the only thing that people are thinking about is sex, and that's all they want to like guarantee themselves at that event. So a lot of times it's very hard to make queer friendships because everyone is just kind of like trying to cling on to looking for romance because we don't always have the chance to do that. So for me, that is like the unlikeliest way. Maybe someone who is straight will be listening to this and be like, really? Yes, really, really. I don't know about what it's like in Zambia. So maybe you can fill me in on what the unlikeliest way you have been affected in your personal life by the stringent laws in your country.
You know, what you just said is one of the, it's like mirroring what we have here. It's like everybody knows each other. Everybody's already dated each other. Everybody's already, like, if you have a friend, we don't even have boundaries anymore. It's like, oh, I'm going to date your ex because we're just that little. It's just like, it's very difficult. My bigger experience of who I was coming out to be was in London mostly. So I was so used to like maybe holding people's hands or dancing near people and going to clubs that are specifically queer. But here it's like you can never do that in your life unless you want your 14 years taken away from you. And it's like simple things like that, like holding hands, going to a club that literally says this is a place where these people can hang out. And that's the thing as well, the smallness of it all, the fact that we all know each other, we've all been together with everybody, we've all talked to somebody, somebody, and somebody's talked to somebody, somebody, and we're all just indoors. And it's and the pandemic doesn't make it any better, because at least we would try to find little spots like that, you know, they can't really tell, they're just like, oh, that's just two chicks dancing together, they do that all the time. But now it's like there's lockdown and it's just worse.
Oh, wow. So it's really interesting to hear how similar our experiences are, even though you're from Zambia and I'm from Zimbabwe. I think another unlikely way, which is a bit of a bummer, this is a bit sad, how it has affected my life. I dated someone a couple of years ago who was violent, and it was very difficult for people around me to understand why I was leaving the relationship or why I couldn't do anything about it. But my thing was like, okay, who do you want me to tell?
That's true. That's also a thing here. Like, where do we report? How are we going to report the nature of this whole thing?
Yeah, but I suppose that's not even an unlikely way for it to affect me. I think that affects people worldwide, people in Africa, queer people, you know, just not having that access to law enforcement, not being able to trust the police that, hey, if I say this has happened to me, you're going to help me. But the first thing they're going to do is try to put you in jail for being a homo. We're going to move on to the very last question, which is, what has been the biggest obstacle in finding love as a queer woman in Africa? And I'm just going to let you take it away.
I think for me, it wasn't even just finding love. It was also knowing what I love. That was hard, because for the longest time in Africa, because you're so conditioned and you're so heteronormative, you don't really have time to explore who you are. And I think that's the biggest problem we have as queer people in Zambia, because you spend this time in a box and you don't even explore yourself as, you know, straight people have their little whole phases and it's free and they have their peaks. But for us, it's like we're thrown into the deep end. And so everybody's just hypersexual. They don't want to find love just yet. They want to find quick fixes. And after your quick fixes, you're going to try to find love in the same quick fixes and then try to be not toxic in the way that you were toxic with them in the playing stage. And it's just like, really? It's just like really sad.
That is really sad.
For me, it's also like, you know, being in a space. People always say we know each other as queer people, but it's always like difficult to kind of like see somebody and then you're like, do you? And then they're also mirroring you, do you like that? And then, you know, that's if we're in a straight space, and that's how we have to like navigate through that. It's like we can't just go to a place that's specific for us and kind of say, oh, I know that person's gonna be down, but we have to like fish through and be secretive. It's sad. Like the dating pool is hard enough, but like even meeting people organically is just like it's a risk to yourself, because you could just bump into this whole straight woman. She's like, don't touch me.
Yeah, 100%. You know what? I actually love what you said, because I had not thought about it like that. But I guess it's almost like we were saying the same thing that I kind of said in question two, which is that everybody is really hypersexualized. And that is because that they've been stifled for so long. So I love that. And I hadn't even thought about that in the context of it being difficult to find love. But you're absolutely right. You'll go through all of these people, then you'll be like, okay, I want to settle down. And you're kind of looking at, what are my options? You're like, you don't have any sis because you slept with everybody. Like. but I think what I can say about it being difficult is just to back what you said about not meeting people organically. A lot of people in African countries have actually met their partners through Tinder or through going on Twitter or going on Instagram and searching a little rainbow or a little rainbow flag just to have that kind of community, and then in that, then finding love. And you know what, I want to be honest, that is how I met my current partner now. And you know what, it's worked out, we live together. But something else that is really, really difficult that I experienced a lot when I decided that I wanted to, you know, be in a committed relationship, because I do consider myself quite a relationship person, is that given like our background as Africans and the homophobia that we face and all of these things that we've been talking about in this episode, sometimes you just have different journeys than the people that you fall in love with or the people that you get into relationships with. You may
That's so true. Everybody has a different view of it. And I just learned that recently, because sometimes I'm like speaking out of privilege because I don't have much of my family here and they don't have to question me on my life's choices, but people have to live with their families every day.
People literally live with their families. Even people that are maybe not living with their families or financially dependent on their families. Some people that have very close relationships with their families that honestly, like, I don't know how else to put it. They're just not willing to risk all for their sexuality. So I think in that, you know, that can be very taxing and that can be very awkward when you get to a certain stage in a relationship. I had, you know, a long-term relationship previously where I really wanted to settle down with my ex. And, you know, one of our biggest obstacles was that she was always saying that she was not ready to come out, especially having, you know, some prominent family members. She was like, no matter where I am, it doesn't matter if I'm gay in America or gay in the Netherlands, it's always going to come back here to my family. And that's going to affect their well-being and, you know, them being in the papers. And I could never get past that. And even though we continued dating for so long, I just knew that at some point it was not going to work out, because at the end of the day, you cannot force someone to come out and you cannot come out for somebody, and you cannot tell them what their family means to them or what the consequences of them coming out, you know, will be.
That's so true. That is so true. And one thing I wanted to mention about the hardships of dating, which I should have mentioned in something that we haven't considered that's affected by the stringent laws, is when we get into these serious relationships, you know, everything's going well. I just thought about it today. I was like, what if my partner dies and we built everything together? And then I don't know about you guys in Zimbabwe, but in Zambia, it would be like, I wouldn't be recognized as a spouse or anything like that, even if we had like a fake little marriage or whatever.
100%.
And that person and all that we built together, let's say they got both of us a car, it would be their car and it would be taken away. And I mean, those are material things, but then like, what about if they carried the child that we had and the child gets taken away because I'm a nobody apparently? And it's like so many heartbreaking things can happen in that situation.
That is a big fear for many, many people that, well, okay, we're going to do all of this, but if I lose you today and you don't have a will, if you're listening to this and you are queer and you are living with your partner, married or whatever, I suggest you draw up a will so that no matter what happens, whether people want to recognize your union or not, you have left your affairs in order.
Please.
But this has been so, so interesting. Guys, I gave you another like 5-6 minutes of this episode. This might be the longest episode we've done on the Feminist Bar podcast yet. And I'm really happy that it was dedicated to queer women. Last week's episode was actually about navigating feminism and heterosexual relationships. And here we are talking about living queer. I am a queer woman myself, and I would love, you know, for all the feminists, all the African feminists, all the feminists worldwide to feel equally represented in this podcast, to listen to it and hear relatable content and to feel like, you know, we have a sense of community here. We have now reached our end. So Lusa, thank you so much for being here. Do you have any final words, any leaving words for anybody who's listening right now?
I'm never going to force anybody to come out, but like, if you're going to live in your truth, even in the closet, do it the best way that you can. Don't hate yourself for it. Don't be hateful to your community for it, because they're the ones that are going to make you stronger. I'm going to leave the last note that we said, keep your affairs in order if you find a long-term relationship, and write that will.
Well, this was fantastic. There's so much more we could delve into. Living queer, it's not just it's a multi-dimensional experience. There's so many different sides to it, financial, professional, social. But thank you so much for being here and thank you for this conversation. It was amazing.
Thank you for having me. I feel like I just got comfortable. There's always so much to unpack with a queer life, and I feel like you should invite me one more time so we can do it again.
Definitely, 100%. If you're listening, you will hear Lusa back here again, talking about queer life in Africa. So yeah, that is a wrap on the episode.
We have reached the end of this week's episode. Thank you so much for listening to the Feminist Bar Podcast. If you would like to engage with us on social media and know when a new episode is out, follow us on Instagram at the Feminist Bar Podcast and on Twitter at the Feminist Bar. Do not hesitate to send through your thoughts in a tweet, a DM, or a voice note about this week's episode or any to come, and I will see you next week.